Art of Chanting, Chapter 3, Nam Aparad. So this is the one we look forward to. This is the bumpy part of the road. Hasn't been paved yet. We wrote an introduction here that Nam Aparad is an utterance. What is Nam Aparad? Nam Aparad is an utterance of the holy name that is made consciously with enmity in the heart. Very interesting definition. That there's a certain anger. Enmity means anger, or anger, and maybe some envy mixed in. Enmity. So it's a conscious thing. It is the lowest form of chanting, wherein one commits any of the 10 offenses against the holy name. As long as one chants with offenses, it is absolutely impossible to attain love of God. Offenses against the holy name, Nam Aparad, are the most frightening of all kinds of sins and offenses. All other kinds of sins and offenses go away naturally and automatically as one utters Hari Nam. But Nam Aparad does not go away so easily. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement in Jiva Dharma, chapter 24. The word Aparad, what is the definition of the word Aparad? It's mentioned here. The word Aparad is composed of two syllables. Apa, which means against. So apa, APA, apa rad, right? There's two words, APA, apa, and then RADHA, radha. Apa means against, without, to take away, or give up. And radha, a rad, it's not long A, it's rad, radha, means success, prosperity, to please, flow of affection. Has nothing to do with radha, it's short A's. It's not radha, it's radha, rad, radha, radha. So don't get confused. Of course, there is some bhav translation that the acharyas also give. Literally, the term Nam Aparad means to displease the holy name. Because rad means satisfaction, and apa means against. So to displease the holy name means Nam Aparad. In other words, Sri Krishna, who is non-different from his holy name, becomes displeased and unhappy with our offensive behavior towards his Nam Rup. Nam Aparad is an offense committed against the holy name, which acts against one's spiritual success by taking the flow of one's affection away from the Supreme Lord. Very interesting. Because in the definition, to repeat, if you write it in writing notes or whatever, apa means against, apa means without, or to take away, or to give up. And rad means success. So an apara means something that's against our success. and rad means prosperity or wealth. So apara means something that's against our wealth, or something that's against our prosperity. And aparad means to, and rad means to please. So aparad means to displease, to not please. And rad means flow of affection. So aparad means that which is against the flow of affection towards Radha and Krishna. So therefore, Nam Aparad, to repeat, is an offense committed against the holy name, which acts against one's spiritual success, or which I put all these, what I did in the last sentence, I combined all the different meanings of the words together. Nam Aparad is an offense committed against the holy name, which acts against one's spiritual success by taking the flow of one's affection away from the Supreme Lord. Some acharyas, in their own bhav, because they probably see everything like this, in relation to this. They say the word aparad means against or without radha. They take rad. It's short A and short, it's no long A, it's rad. They take it aparad to mean aparada, against radha, which ultimately is true, because the devotees represent radha, and that's the biggest problem. That's the biggest aparad. It's Vaishnava aparad. Vaishnava aparad means aparad against Radharani. Simple. Everyone says, oh, I love Radharani. Oh, Radharani looks so beautiful. Oh, look at her face. Oh, look at her garland. Oh, this outfit's so beautiful. And then a minute later, ah, this devotee, you stupid jerk. it's such a paradox or something, that it's impossible. It's all show. It's all fake. It's all external. So-called love of Radha, or appreciation of Radha, or to see the deity. Because Radharani, what is Radharani? Radharani is Bhakti Devi. So if there's anyone as a devotee, he's a bhakta, that means he has some of Radharani in him or her. So when we offend a Vaishnava, we're offending Radharani. Some acharyas say the word aparad means against or without Radha. Nam aparad, therefore, is the lowest type of chanting, where Krishna Nam is without Appa Radha. So, in other words, you're chanting Krishna's name, but Radharani's not there. Offenses to Krishna's holy name are also offenses against Radha, who represents the topmost expression of loving affection for Krishna. Right? Because we said, what does aparad mean? It means against affection. The word rad means a flow of affection. So who is the most affectionate devotee of the Lord?
Radharani.
So an aparad means against Radharani. Offenses to the Krishna's name are also offenses against Radha. Why? Because she represents the topmost expression of loving affection for Krishna. Bhakti or devotion cannot exist without the presence of Srimati Radhika. And I have a little thing I added here that's not in the book. And its title here is Love-Hate Attitude. It's like Raga and Dvesh. Bhagavad Gita is all about Raga and Dvesh. And that's what, simply stated, Raga and Dvesh means love and hate. Rag means attachment. We're attached to the things we love. And dvesh means envy or hatred. And we hate the things that, or we're envious of the things that we don't have or we can't have. Committing aparad means one's consciousness or mentality is against the goal of bhakti. The goal of Krishna prema, pure loving service of Radha and Krishna. Excuse me, that is the goal. In other words, we're saying that committing an aparad means that one's consciousness or mentality is against actually the goal. And okay, the goal of bhakti. What is the goal of bhakti? The goal of bhakti is love, Krishna prema, the pure loving service of Radha and Krishna. If we have a hateful attitude or want to harm or hurt a devotee, that means aparad. So again, it's about the attitude. That's why I said it's love-hate attitude. It's the mentality, which this is an elaboration on Jivadharma chapter 24, which we read, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation of the internal source of aparad, which is the mentality, the attitude. So we're trying to understand, because it's very important, it's really very important, because this is... this is the most important subject, Nama Parad. If you're going down the road and you're going somewhere and you're going to some destination, and everything's going nice, a car is working fine, you feel good, and the road is open, and you're making good progress towards the city you're going to or the village you're going to, and all of a sudden there's a massive block across the road. There's a huge tree has fallen across the road. And it's impassable. You can't get around it. And you're thinking, oh my God, where do I go now? Running out of things here to hold up. Where do I go now? The road is totally blocked. And I have so far to go, and now I'm just began my journey. I just began my journey, and I have so far to go. This is all. This is analogous to our progress on the path of bhakti, which is also a road or a path. It's called bhakti marg. So now there's this big tree in the way. Oh, fortunately, I have a saw in my trunk of my car. I have a saw. So then you stop your car because you can't go. You're blocked. And you get the saw out of your trunk of your car and you start sawing the log so you can move it out of the way. And once that log is out of the way, if there's no more logs, then you can make clear sailing, as they say. Make rapid progress, smooth and comfortable progress on the road to your destination. So this is the same thing. The tree in this analogy or this story represents Aparad. And the destination is the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna and their Prem Seva and the groves of Vrindavan. Nikunja Seva, Nikunja Yuno Ratikeli Siddhyang, Yayalabir Yuktira Pekshaniya. But unless this tree is removed from the road, it won't get anywhere. We'll just be looking at the tree. We'll just be sitting in our car looking at the tree. The car is the human body, and the tree is Aparad. So we're sitting, oh yeah, look at all these Aparads. Well, what to do? So to understand how they manifest and how to remove them and how to stay clear of them and progress smoothly is of utmost importance. Because often in the Vaishnav Samaj, people say, you offended me. You made an offense. And they use this term all the time, especially in cities north of here. I've been preaching in Delhi for 20 years and I hear so many people use this term left, right, and center. They speak this word as much as they speak the holy name. I hear this aparad, aparad, this aparad. And 90% of the time there's no aparad. No aparad has been made but people have this misconception that if you just sit on the wrong side of them during prasadam, hey, you're sitting in the wrong place, you're making an offense. The most minor infraction, because no one seems to understand this crucial point is the mentality, the position of the heart and the mentality behind one's speech and actions. This is everything. It's the intention. Even in the material world, at least in the modern Kali Yuga material world, in the court of law, the judge will take into consideration the mentality of the criminal. Someone performs a crime, there, and even there's, like if someone comes and kills someone, that means that person's dead. That's murder. But there's actually different categories and classifications of murder. There's manslaughter, it's called manslaughter, there's cold-blooded murder, premeditated murder. There's all different types. There's actually three or four different types, maybe more. I'm not so versed in law, but I know of these few. That if you're at home and somehow two brothers start fighting innocently over something and you pick up a chair and hit your brother on the head and he dies that's a murder. You murdered him. He's dead. But that's, in one sense, accidental. And you didn't have an idea to murder him. You just got angry because he took your mahaprasad or whatever. And he started a fight and got out of hand due to Rajagun. And then, when that case goes to court, the judgment will be very lenient because the pleader or the lawyer advocate will say, listen, they're two brothers and now this family only had two sons, two children. Now one is dead and he put the other one in jail for life. Then that's not very good for the mother. It's not very good for the family. And this was not intentional. It was just accidental. So that's called manslaughter, at least in America. Accidental death or murder or whatever. So then they may even drop the case. They say, okay, doesn't go one day to jail. Because they consider all the circumstances, being the only son and all these things. Not so much in America, but in India, I consider this. And then also the intention. So what I'm trying to convey here to you is that the judge, how he's deciding what is this crime and what is the reaction and punishment to be given out or awarded, he considers the mentality, the position of the heart and the mentality. Is that clear? Now there's another person who's a butler in the house. It's a famous, the butler did it. The famous subject, soap operas. So the butler is working for years in this house of the very wealthy rich man. And every day he's thinking, I can't stand this guy. I can't stand this guy. I want to kill this guy. I want to kill this guy. I want to kill this guy. So he's always meditating on killing the master, killing the boss. And then finally one day he gets the boss's gun and he kills him. Doom. But many times during his service there for 10 years in that house, he would reveal his mind to the other servants, the dishwasher, the doorman, the chauffeur. So I can't stand this guy. I'm going to kill this guy. So then when he went to court, then the lawyers were saying, actually, Your Honor, this defendant, this is premeditated murder. Premeditated, meditating before, previous meditation. He's been meditating for 10 years on killing this guy. In fact, it's the only thing he's been thinking about. So he finally couldn't contain his meditation anymore. So he expressed himself. So you can decide what to do with him. So then he'll get a very severe penalty, maybe life imprisonment for that murder. So no one person murdered and didn't go to jail, stayed home. Another person murdered and went to jail for life. Same crime, same judge. Result was the same. Somebody died. Somebody was murdered. Someone lost their life. One case the brother, and one case the boss, or the employee, master of the house, the wealthy man. But what the judge is considering here and giving out the punishment was the mentality, the position of the heart and the mind. So the same thing that we're discussing here. It's the attitude, the mentality, the position of the heart and the thinking. It determines what is an aparad and what is not, and then how severe that aparad is and how severe it isn't, or how less severe. Whatever. So this, I'll continue with this explanation. The goal is Krishna Prem, pure love, or pure loving service of Radha and Krishna. If we have a hateful attitude, or we want to harm or hurt a devotee, that means a mentality of aparad, or means aparad, actually means aparad. The goal of Krishna Prem means to love, to respect, and to serve Krishna, and to love, serve, and respect, or rather I could say respect, love, and serve everything and everyone related to Krishna. It's quite basic stuff. But sometimes the basis were never actually established in our modus operandi, in our way of thinking, the basic line of the basic mentality that makes up what we call a bhakta, an actual devotee, was never really established in our little brains, in our little hearts, because of misdirection or misunderstanding or improper teaching or application of the knowledge or principles that we heard about. He's putting everything in a very simple way, because this aparad is very complex and very deep-rooted, because aparad is rooted not in your tongue and a few words you may say, or in your hands you may push somebody or knock them down or slap somebody. But aparad, the root, the mool of the root of aparad is the heart. It's heart deep and mind deep. This is the real problem. And it's very difficult to remove the root. It's easy to cut the leaves off the weed, go in the garden and cut the top leaves off, but the roots may be deep in the ground. It's It's very hard to remove, especially big trees. It's very hard to remove the roots when you dynamite sometimes. A big tree, it's so much inside the ground. So, the goal of Krishna Prem, that's our goal. Everyone pretty much agrees to that. If you ask why are you here and what are we doing? Is our goal liberation? No. Prema Pumartha Mahan. Pancha Purusharta. Chaitanya, at least in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In Madhva Sampradaya or in the Ramanandis or Rambhaktas or other Vaishnava Sampradayas besides Nimbargi and Gaudiya, in other Vaishnava Sampradayas, the goal is mukti. Dharma, art, kam, moksha, liberation to Vaikuntha. But that is not the goal at all of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. To go back home, back to Godhead. That's not the goal at all. That's the name of the magazine, Bus. But Godhead means love. Love the source. Love the Father. The goal is Krishna Prem. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says repeatedly. Nadana na janana sundarim kavitam vaja kadhisha kamaye mama janmani janmani ashwari bhavata bhakti rahoita kitvai. He says the goal is not moksha. The goal is to take birth after birth. The goal is not to stop birth and death. The goal is ahoitaki apratiyata. Ahoitaki bhakti. Causeless and pure love of God. Causeless and pure devotional service. Birth after birth. Many, many births let us take. Bahunam, Janmanam, what is it? Bahunam, the verse Krishna tells Arjuna, many, many births I have taken, both you and I have taken. I remember all of them, but you cannot. So therefore, this is our goal. Our goal is not to go back to Godhead. Our goal is love, prem, Krishna prem. Everyone, I think, understands that. That's called the sadhya. That's why, if you don't understand that, it's called sadhana sadhya brahm. Bewilderment, illusion, confusion, doubt about what is the goal? What am I doing? Why am I here? What am I practicing? Where is it leading to? What does it culminate in? What is the final point and destination? That's like you're in college and someone says, why are you here? I'm here to get a degree, man. What else? I'm here to get a degree in engineering, to get a job, to make money, to live. What else? And that's why we're in college, to get qualification, education. So why are we in Krishna consciousness? To get education, to get qualification. For the prem seva and Radha Krishna. Here, there, anywhere. Where? We don't care. Wherever the master goes, we serve the master. The master goes in the material world, we serve in the material world. The master's in the spiritual world, we serve in the spiritual world. We don't care. That's not our ambition. Salvation. Get me out of here. I don't like this place. Get me out of here. It's not the place that's bad. It's the consciousness that's bad. It's a lack of love. That's what we're missing. That's why we're suffering. It's not that India's terrible or Russia's terrible. Everything is good. Everything is comfortable, supportive, friendly. Those that are on the highest level of love, they see Vishram Sukham, Vishram Purna Sukhayate. Vishram Purna Sukhayate, they see the whole world, the universe is full of happiness. Vishram Sukha. Vishram Purnam Sukhayate, that everything is full of happiness. There's no birth, no death, no old age, no disease. Everyone's serving Krishna. And Krishna's everywhere. We're suffering, not because we're in the material world. We're suffering because we don't have love of God. That's the cause of the suffering. Not the body, not the world. So this is our goal. So that, what does it mean to love Krishna? It means to respect and serve and love Him, and love Him and everything related to Him. Devotees, Vaishnavas, are the dearest to Krishna. And that's told in umpteen scriptures. We often make aparad due to envy of others. We desire to do some activity, but due to circumstances we can't. And then we criticize out of envy. For example, say some sannyasi falls down and engages in illicit sex. Then another sannyasi hears of his fall down and he criticizes that unfortunate sannyasi. Actually, he's criticizing him because he actually desires in his heart to do the same thing. Due to envy, he complains heavily and finds fault with that sannyasi. It's actually a fact. What does envy mean? Envy means you want something someone else has. You want to do what someone else is doing. Hey, this rascal sannyasi. And I remember there's one poet when we were young. He said, "There but poor fortune go you or I." I think Paul Simon or something like that. We probably weren't even born in those days. But anyway, he was a kind of a hip poet, musician poet. He said, "There but poor fortune go you or I." In other words, if we could, any one of us could also end up in the same fate. No one is infallible except Krishna. Only Krishna has the name Achyuta. No one else is known as Achyuta except Krishna. He never fails, never falls. Due to envy, he complains heavily and finds fault with that sannyasi. We must always check the position of our hearts, the position of our minds and mentality. Do we want to hurt or put someone down? Aparad means our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions which go against our goal of loving Krishna and the persons and things related to Krishna. The saying is, love me. What is it saying? Love me. Love my kuta. Love my dog. Love me, love my dog. So, and oftentimes we say the devotees are Guru's dogs or Krishna's dogs. This is our collar. Dogs have a collar, a choker. It's called a choker or collar. Hey, come here. So I have a loose one because I'm a loose dog. Actually, it's loose so the guru can get a good hold on it. You know, if it's too tight around, if your neck beads are too tight, how does the guru grab you? He can't get his fingers in there. So if your neck beads are too tight, it's easier for you to slip away from the guru's grasp. But if they're a little loose, you just reach out. Hey! This is my idea. If I keep them loose, then guru can grab them. Hey, come here, rascal. Come here. And I give you a good yank. This way, you can't hardly get one finger. If you have it like this, you can't get one finger inside. Especially if you're eating lots of Mahaprasad. Because your neck is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And your neck beads are not expanding, only your neck, but you're not your beads. So therefore, we're dogs, Vaishnav dogs. I remember there were some t-shirts, it was quite a funny, really, really funny. We must have saw a lot in Mayapur. There was a group of devotees came from Northern Europe, and all the brahmacharis, and they wore this saffron t-shirt, and said, Vishnupad's dogs. But said Vishnupad, there was one guru, his nickname or whatever his honorable name was Vishnupad. Usually a shishya can call it guru Vishnupad or Prabhupada or Gurudev or Guru Maharaj or whatever. And there's some reminiscences of Govinda Dasi, and she says, once we were with Srila Prabhupada in 1968 and we were calling him Swamiji, then Prabhupada was saying, actually, this term Swamiji is third class. This was 66, 67, 68. So for 3 years they're calling Prabhupada Swamiji. And he didn't say anything. But one day, somehow they called him Swamiji. And he said, this term G is a very third class term. You just tag that onto anything. Any name, you say G this, and anybody's a G. And he said, this is third class. And then Govinda Dasi said, well, Prabhupada, we don't want to call you this name anymore. And Prabhupada was quiet. He didn't say anything because Prabhupada is free from any type of ego or pride. Prabhupada, we don't want to call you this name anymore. And he was quiet. He didn't respond. And then she continued the speaking. She was a one-sided conversation. Is there anything else we can call you that the disciples, or anything else, that any other name, that term that disciples use to address their guru Maharaj or spiritual master? And Prabhupada said, yes, in the scriptures it says you can
address the guru in terms of a respectful address would be either Prabhupada or Vishnupada. And then, or Srila Prabhupada, or something like that, Srila Prabhupada. So then Govindadas, yes, well, Prabhupada, can we call you Srila Prabhupada? I mean, she said, or Swamiji, or whatever. She said, can we call you, well, Prabhupada, we want to call you, we'll call you Srila Prabhupada. From now on, we'll call you Srila Prabhupada. That's what she said. And she said, when I said that, Prabhupada did an Indian, movement of the head, which means, okay. So from 1968 on, by the introduction of Govinda Dasi, then Prabhupada started to be known as Srila Prabhupada. But that's interesting. Now he's known as Srila Prabhupada. But now the first Guru Puja, there was no Guru Puja until 1974. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma. 1974. 9 years, Prabhupada was just, and 3 of those years he was Swamiji, which is anybody on the street is Swamiji or Maharaji. Maharaji. It's a pretty low class, third class term. And so this, and that was, I believe the first Guru Puja was in Bombay. So Prabhupada didn't have much, he wasn't too much interested in being worshipped. If some devotee sees some bad behavior or faults in me, like say someone sees some devotee friend of yours, some lady or man, if some devotee sees some bad behavior or faults in me and points it out to me with a helping, loving mood, then he is my friend and well-wisher. Although criticism or chastisement feels very pinching, very bitter at first, it's like drinking neem juice. It's very bitter and disagreeable taste, but it produces a very good result, especially if you have jaundice or something. Neem juice cleanses and purifies the blood and stomach and helps us keep very good health. So, I don't know if you've ever taken neem juice or Corella juice. I remember once in 1994, we were in Missouri, Sridhar Swami and Radhanath Swami and I, and all three of us were studying Hindi together. Actually, we weren't in Missouri, we were above Missouri in Landauer. Missouri is 5,000 feet above, and Landauer is 7,500, so it was above Missouri, nearby. We're studying Hindi there, not very successful, but we were there for 1 month. And Sridhar Maharaj told us that we should all go on a special Corella juice fast, because he said it's good for losing weight. But Radhanath Swami and I aren't really that heavy to start with. But he was quite healthy, let's say, at the time. And so then he, every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, Govinda Das, or this one brahmachari from Chaupati, he was making our Corella juice. And downstairs, Sridhar Maharaj is downstairs in this house he rented. Radhanath Swami and I were upstairs. And he, I don't know how he took his, whatever, but he would bring it up to us. And Radhanath Swami would look at each other. We go like this, touch our cups, say, cheers to your health. And then we go like this, and then put it down because I couldn't drink it. And then he said, we were like, it was almost like Radha and Krishna drinking wine, on Madhupan Leela, how they pretended. So I say, Maharaj, because you're much senior devotee to me, you should take first. I was telling that to Radhanath Swami, because he took sannyas in 83 and I took in 85. And he's initiated long before 72 or 3, and I was 75. So anyway, he's much senior in all regards. So I said, Maharaj, out of all deference to you, I think I want, because then I can take your, it'll be prasad. If you take, then it'll be prasad Corella. He said, no, but actually, you're staying in Vrindavan. So now you're a Brijavasi. I'm staying in Bombay. So now you've gone beyond me. So so then I said, anyway, let's... Sorry, Krishna. And then we figured out if you throw it in the back of your throat, you can't taste it. Because if you avoid the tongue, then you can't taste it, because the taste buds are on the tongue. That we figured out after a couple of days. So it's like, the whole thing inside. But still, you could feel the effect. Oh, it hit your stomach. Anyway, no, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. It's better to be sick. You feel happier to be sick. So this is the point. It's about mentality. Is there anyone wants to say anything at this point on this?
The mentality. But the mind is very strong. You get carried away on a certain point, and you can even justify it to yourself. Right? So for yourself to actually see whether it's actually critical or...
So the main standard of measurement to measure whether we feel some criticism, we want to criticize or say something to a devotee, we can use this standard to find out whether it's actually upright or whether it's actually beneficial, it's helpful. And because you ask yourself this question, if you're actually going to do something more than just entertaining the thought, you're going to approach a devotee and you're going to say this or that about their behavior or this or that about something. You're going to actually directly confront them and tell them something. And before you confront them, you can, as they often, Prabhupada often said, an intelligent man thinks three times before he says anything, at least three times, but he said that. So then we can use the standard by saying, am I approaching this devotee? Am I going to criticize or correct or am I doing this because I really love this devotee? Do I really love? Because that's what kind of part of what we were hinting at, what we were discussing here. I actually love this devotee. I actually have strong feelings for this devotee. This devotee is my friend, and I genuinely want to help them. I genuinely think I can help improve their bhajan or improve their devotional behavior by advising them in this way, or pointing this particular defect or fault or imperfection out to them, and I'm clear on my motivation. I've checked myself. I've done a diagnostic check, computer diagnostic check on my engine, and my spark plugs are working properly, and my carburetor is working properly. Analyze your car. So we check ourselves first. I really love this devotee. I really genuinely have feelings. Or is it coming from another source? Is it sourcing from actually? I'm saying this, and I'm correcting this person because I don't like this person, and because this person is actually a little bit better than me in some different categories, and actually, what's really pushing forward this desire to criticize or to point out or correct or blaspheme or ridicule or advise? What's really pushing me to do this is my envy, my inherent envy of this Vaishnava or Vaishnavi, and not my actual inherent loving mood and loving feeling towards this person. So the offense. Now what? Yeah, well now the person who comes,
it's not
a
conscious
offense. Yeah. Yeah, it's innocent in the sense they were following the line of the leader. They were following the party line. They were following the party line, and just without their own individual discrimination or intelligence or intuition or perception applied there. And then later they found out the party line was off. And so then they became a conspirator of the group offense against an individual or even an institution in some cases, or a whole group of individuals. So if one realizes that and posthumously or whatever, after the fact, then of course he can approach to the best of his ability. He can approach the concerned party and with a repentant mood and beg for forgiveness and try to render some service to bring some happiness to that Vaishnava. That's the remedial measure that's enjoined. But main thing is that, you know, the herd mentality. It's called the herd mentality. The herd going, one sheep runs and that 20 sheep run and the other one's sitting there drinking water. Oh, the herd means a group. Herd, H-E-R-D, not what you heard, but H-E-R-D. H-E-R-D means a group. The collection of sheep are all running and I'm drinking. Oh, that's my group. That's my herd. And then I better run with them. But they're actually all running and they run like lemmings. There's a type of little rat who lives in England, lemming, and sometimes they all start running and they run off a cliff and they all die. Because when they become too populated, become too many of these little rodents. It's a type of rodent or type of outside rat, type of rat type thing called lemming. And they and so by nature's arrangement, when they become overpopulated, too many of them to kind of balance the population, it's arranged that they all run off and commit suicide, so to speak. Sounds funny, but that's what they do. So a bunch of them start running, and everyone says, all my people are running that way. I better run with them. So all the he's chasing, and he says the next day, where are we going? I don't know. We're following the leader. Oh, okay, as long as we're following the leader, it's good. So he's running and running. But where is he taking us? Don't ask these stupid questions. Why you just follow, you know? He never did us wrong before. We followed him and we got all right. You know, we found the water hole. We found a place to live. We got away from the jackals and wolves. Okay, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, you're right. So he stays and then, hey, wait a minute. And they all go flying off the cliff. You know, 2, 5, 7, 100, and 300 of them fall down and all die in the bottom of the ravine, in the mountain, the ravine. They all crash up and die. So it's kind of like this called the herd mentality. You know, the leader says that, this guy is bogus. Oh, the leader said this guy's bogus. Hey, he's bogus. So then everyone flies off the cliff and commits spiritual suicide. Everyone commits a collective apparad, global karma. I have global karma, institutional karma, institutional apparad. Oh, so-and-so Maharaj is bogus. No one should go see him. And then everyone hears that coming down from on high. They say, oh, I heard from on high that so-and-so is bogus. But they meet some new bhakta that's going to so-and-so. They say, oh, do you know that so-and-so is totally 100% bogus? He's a demon, rascal, fool, jerk. Aparadi. Oh, really? And then they tell another bhakta, that their friend that was also going to so-and-so. They say, oh, do you know so-and-so, that on high says that he's a bogus, rascal. Oh, so then the global aparad, the institutional aparad goes, the beat goes on, as they say. It expands more and more and more. Ad infinitum. Into infinity. So it has its repercussions. The mushroom cloud of aparad and the radioactive fallout gives everybody cancer. Everybody's born with 6 arms and 3 eyes and all kinds of deformities. And so it takes a little bit of stamina. It takes a little bit. If someone has bhakti, bhakti is like a barometer. It's like bhakti is so powerful because bhakti has two children, gyan and vairagya. These are two children of bhakti devi. If we have bhakti, then we'll have the sufficient discrimination to say, okay, everyone's going that way. Great, you go that way. I'm going this way.
Okay, so that takes a little. So he's doing that, he accepts what they say, but still at the same time, because he's repeated what they've said, there's some, you know, is that an offense? He's repeated the party line in immaturity and in.
Yeah, well, from what we've heard from Bhaktivinoda Thakur about Namaparad, from Jiva Dharma, and what we hear from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Madhurya Kadambini, you can say there's, because there is such a thing, as I said, global karma, so there is some guilt by association, like conspiracy. He gets something, but in terms of strict definition of aparad, because his mentality is transparent and his heart is clear, then there's really no aparad on his directly on his behalf, registered there. But what happens is that if he later, when he comes to develop, as you mentioned, the maturity of devotion and devotion and get sufficient discrimination and understanding of the part people involved, then he realizes that, oh, that knowingly or unknowingly I was culpable for that years ago, for that offense to this Vaishnava. I should somehow try to rectify my individual position, reinstate myself in a good standing with this particular Vaishnava. So that will be very much appreciated by Krishna, and also it will, any kind of fragrance or of that aparad that may be lingering in one's consciousness will be removed by that mentality and by that action. Because because awareness brings responsibility.
That's just what I was going to mention. The responsibility makes you responsible for your spiritual.
Yes. Awareness brings responsibility, and as you increase your awareness, you become more responsible for your spiritual activities and spiritual progress and speaking and acting and thinking. You begin to manifest your individual persona, that you may be part of the herd, still be moving in a herd or in a group or an association, but you have your individuality, which begins to manifest in a spiritual way as you advance in Krishna consciousness. And that's a very important aspect of advancement in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada repeatedly told us that he wanted to create an ISKCON, a society of Brahmins. He wanted it to be a society of Brahmins, which means, a Brahmin means, there's Brahman and Brahman, Brahmana and Kripana. So a Brahmana is someone who's very broad-minded. So Prabhupada wanted and he's a thinker, he's a muni, he applies his intelligence based on Shastra. So Prabhupada wanted us to have Bhakti Shastri test and Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Sarvabhoma. He wanted us to deeply study the Shastra and get clear understanding and devotional and intellectual discrimination so that we can behave properly and act properly, and not get entangled in the web of aparads and offenses to others. So this, at the same time, we're a society. So we're a society, we're living together in a society of Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, but we're also individuals with broad thinking and very wide conceptions and open hearts. It actually, as the heart opens more, the thinking expands. The more the heart is open, illuminated with spiritual vibration, the more the thinking expands. And as you think more, you can understand and absorb more of what's going on. This is chapters Nama Parad, chapter 3 of Art of Chanting. We had the introduction and talked about the attitude, the basis or the source of aparad, which is the attitude or the mentality or the position of the heart, the love-hate attitude. Our attitude should be one of love, respect, and service. And so anything that, whatever we speak or whatever we act, coming from that source, a mood of love, a mood of help, we want to help someone, we want to respect them and love them and serve them, then we'll be pretty much free from aparad in general, because our heart is rightly adjusted and our mentality is rightly positioned.